You know how amazing is it? It's so amazing. It gave my husband the power to want to clean.
It's true.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk to our friend Matt Savickle about atheism, Doctor Who, and, well, atheism in Doctor Who.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Yep, that's me.
And my husband, Nick Glover.
And your husband, Nick Glover.
Welcome, Nick Glover.
Hi.
I'm sorry, the magical, majestic, most amazing host, Nick Glover.
Better. Closer.
And today we are joined by our friend, Matt Savickle, who is here.
Hey, everyone.
He is an atheist and a Doctor Who expert. So
yes.
He fits all sorts of categories.
I don't think there's any way to understate his Doctor Who expertise.
Yeah, no, there's not.
I have to show you guys this. I wear it on my sleeve.
What does he wear on his sleeve?
Oh. Struggle! He's taking off his sweatshirt.
It's winter in Minnesota.
Oh,
is that Gallifreyan?
Yeah. It is. He has a Gallifreyan. We got to take a picture of that.
Yeah, we'll take a picture.
Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
This has got to go in the show notes.
It's the Seal of Rassilon.
The Seal.
Fantastic.
The Seal of Rassilon. Did you know the first word that I taught Alex when he was starting to speak, you know, besides Mama and Dada?
Yeah.
We're like, let's try to get him to say really difficult, challenging words, and Rassilon was the first word we got. Because it was really adorable to have a two-year-old go, Wathawan.
I was going to say, if you'd gotten me to say, it would have been Rathalon.
Yeah. It was
fantastic.
Great.
It was awesome.
It's from Doctor Who. Excellent. Well, all right. So, Matt, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you came to atheism and all that stuff?
Yeah, I'm actually a relatively recent convert to it, if you could call it that.
Right.
I was raised Catholic, like pretty strict Catholic. Like, we'd go every week, confirmation, all of that. And I just was raised in an environment where there was just no critical thinking being taught.
Mm. Sure.
You know, I would see something on TV and accept it as gospel, basically, you know. So I grew up Catholic, and I had this kind of weird amalgamation of those ideas, but I'm also gay. And so kind of knowing that disconnect, you know, 14 or 15 years old, knowing that, okay, the Bible's fallible about this thing, so why, you know, that leads me to question other things. But
you know, you're a good person. The Bible's telling you, because you feel this way, you're a bad person, and that's a internal conflict.
Yeah, you just have this cognitive dissonance going on, which leads you to start questioning other things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then growing up, you know, I grew up in Blaine, Minnesota, which is, for those of you who don't know, it's Anoka Hennepin School District. That's where the, you know, rash of teenage suicides was.
Right.
This is Michelle Bachmann country, basically.
And it's always been a pretty LGBT unfriendly area.
Yeah.
If
we have anybody out there, and I know we have listeners who aren't from Minnesota, and if you aren't from Minnesota, you might not know who Michelle Bachmann is, especially if you're not.
She ran for president.
America. She did run for president.
But she was that crazy bitch.
Yeah,
she's crazy.
God told her to run for president.
She's fucking insane and very, very anti-gay. Very vocally anti-gay. Her husband...
Super gay. like gayer than 9 guys blowing 10 guys.
Her husband is a, and there are air quotes around this, a recovered homosexual. Although nobody...
So just a homosexual.
So, yeah. Just gay.
So out of curiosity, like you say, you didn't have a lot of no critical thinking. Did you ever ask your parents questions about stuff? Like, obviously, you are a critical thinker.
By
nature.
I am, but it's, you know, being raised with that expectation that there's an afterlife, that you have a soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these things you learn at a very, very young age. You know, where you're indoctrinated, you know, side by side with the sky is blue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're being taught that, and then to build upon that, you know, your life view and how you think about things, and it takes quite an effort to deconstruct that and to go back. And so it for me, it took a long time. It took until I was 28, 29 before I really started slowing down and really questioning, what do I believe and why do I believe it?
Sure. Uh-huh. Re-examining your beliefs.
Did school help with any of, like, did you have any teachers that maybe helped promote critical thinking that you think, like, looking back, that you can think, oh, that might have been where I started to think of things on my own and like, look for answers on my own?
Yeah, I would definitely say, you know, in some science classes and such, mm-hmm. but it's taught, you know, in the context of science, and it's not taught, you know, the scientific method is actually a valid, you know, thing that you can apply to the real world.
Sure.
It's just science.
And evaluate any truth claim, not just...
Right. Not just those of scientific note.
Right.
Exactly. Sure.
What, public school?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So, Blaine High School started the first GSA in the district. There was one started in Blaine and then simultaneously one in Anoka.
Gay Straight Alliance.
Yeah, that's the Gay Straight Alliance. That's awesome. Did you feel that when you were at the school that you, I mean, did you know you were gay at all? Did you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I probably came out to myself when I was 15, and then when I was 16, you know, told one or two people, unfortunately told the wrong person, you know, it got out at the school, was...
You didn't get to control...
Like, they just told everybody?
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrifying.
It was hard. Same class, by the way, as Josh Carson. So, local comedian.
Josh Carson. Yes. I don't know if he's a friend of the show.
Class of 98. Sorry. Yeah, I don't know what his religious beliefs are, but. But so, just in that environment, it was, you know, constant. It was hard.
Turmoil.
Being one of, like, an outed kid with no control over it. The one thing that I did that was kind of funny in retrospect. Just to maintain some semblance of, you know, being able to have some say in high school, was I decided, like, okay, well, one way to get back out all these people that are kind of picking on me is I'll make a quote-unquote the list of here's, you know, the 12th graders that I think are hot. You know, starting with number one, you know, going through
my God.
20 or 30 of them. You know, and I did it by grade. You know,
sure.
I mean, here I was, you know, in 11th grade. This is pre even Ellen coming out.
All right.
But, you know, so I had the list, and it was a real list, but it was, you know, something I would show my close friends, and you find out, you know, who your friends are very quickly that environment.
Yeah.
But it was a one way to have something private. Mm-hmm. It was like they already knew that, you know, which was such a big deal, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know you said that you've recently, you know, full on converted atheism, or, you know, describe yourself.
Figured it out.
Do you, would you, I mean, there's lots of, you know, flavors of atheism, we'll call them, but, like, would you say that you are decidedly anti-theist and that you think that religion is dangerous or harmful, or more of a, hey, whatever you believe is cool with me, dude? Like,
I would say I'm definitely not an accommodationist, so.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, see, that makes it all negative.
I like that. Not an accommodationist. I like that.
So,
I will not accommodate your beliefs.
Yeah.
Religion just breeds poor thinking. It's,
mm-hmm.
It requires it.
Yeah.
It, by definition, faith is poor thinking. I mean, mm-hmm. It is.
Or at least not critical thinking.
It's like, how do you distinguish faith from gullibility?
Sure.
Yeah.
Or from lies. I mean, even well-meaning lies sometimes, but lies.
Yeah.
Untruth.
Yeah. Well, that's I have a similar experience where when, at least with atheism, when my family found out, my family likes to make fun of anybody for being different at all. Like, that's just their way of dealing with things.
It's a little affection.
It's not, like, hurtful, but it's constant. And so when I when I said I was an atheist, it became very much like, oh, well, we won't talk about this around you. Oh, don't say God. Molly's here. And it's like, you know, and it's weird how people suddenly, like, if they don't understand something, or if it's something about someone they always have known that changes their perception, they immediately turn to mockery. Like, it's just...
Yeah, and it's like, I don't want to be that person that's like, oh, you know, don't celebrate Christmas or whatever. I'm much more of, like, a celebrate. I mean, Christmas is a secular holiday.
For
when,
sure.
When Christians petitioned the federal government in the 1870s to have it added, you know, that's when they lost the right to call it, you know, an exclusively religious event.
I agree completely.
Ooh, that's
it's Crimbo now.
Yeah, it's Crimbo. Piaches.
Uncle Crimbo comes. Suck it.
So, but yeah, so I came to atheism relatively late, and I kind of came to it basically through a YouTube video, which we shared
on the Facebook
wall.
Experience.
Yeah,
one.
With Matt Dillahunty. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you search YouTube for Matt Destroys the Christian, you can see the 20-minute video that
it's
basically
pretty amazing.
Yeah,
we'll definitely put that in the notes because there's two parts to that, a few months back, but we'll put it in the notes.
And it made me realize that, you know, even if there is this God, you know, like to use a Star Trek reference, this kind of Q-like entity out there, you know, just because even if something like that exists, it isn't necessarily worthy of worship or praise. And if you look at the Bible as an accurate reflection of that God's character, you know, you can easily see that that's, I mean, he's a moral thug.
Yeah.
And, and so I came to atheism not
heavy.
Came to it not even through a skeptic route, and it wasn't even until after that where I went back and started listening to various podcasts, reading books, you know, by
the Four Horsemen.
Those people. You know, it's getting that knowledge and then realizing, oh, you know, here's, you should evaluate, you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Yes.
You know, not taking something at face value, not, you know, watching Ancient Aliens on, you know, the History
Bigfoot
Channel.
Hunter.
Yeah. And thinking like, oh, that'd be so cool if it were true, you know.
I love it when Carl Sagan said that in Cosmos. It was like, when he says it, it's so simple.
Yeah.
Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah. All right. That makes a lot of logical sense.
Yeah.
And you just don't think about it. And so many people don't think of it that way. It's like they give you the flimsiest of possible proofs, and they're like, see?
Yeah.
Like, no, what you're claiming is really out there, and your evidence needs to be equally out there.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's like the most extraordinary claim.
Yeah,
like, I don't know.
It is.
An omniscient being. Like,
and you're
proof, and omnipotent on top of it.
Right.
I mean,
your
I
proof
just,
is
yeah.
this book, which you cannot prove was written by the person you claim who wrote it.
Yeah.
Who wrote it.
Yeah.
So as we mentioned, you're a Doctor Who expert. And so I wonder, how, as you came to atheism, was there any overlap with Doctor Who? Because I know that it's a very, because it's, you know, the time, space, all of time and space, it's hard to have any kind of concept of one religion with that.
Yeah. I became a Doctor Who fan in 1996. I actually became to it through the Paul McGann TV movie. So when people say, you know, are you a fan of the old show or the new show? It's like, neither really. It was like, I was, you know, smack dab in the wilderness.
You're a fan of, like, the hated middle part. It's like kind of awesome.
Episode one's your favorite.
It's like coming to Star Trek through the animated series. Or
Yeah.
My favorite Star Wars character is Jar Jar Binks. Like,
the good thing about coming to it through the TV movie is, like, it's pretty much all uphill from there. It's like you're like, oh, there's more of this, and you go, what? And what? You're like, oh, this is better than what I just saw, and this is better than I just saw. This is all better than what I just saw. Wow, that's amazing. So if you like that TV movie and you think, wow, this is awesome, then I mean, what a treat! In some
ways, so much more for you. Yeah, out there. And
for me, it was, you know, new Doctor Who. I mean, Paul McGann was my doctor, so new Doctor Who for me were the Big Finish audios, the novels.
Oh wow, okay.
All of that, you know, the expanded universe.
I haven't read any of the. I've only watched TV shows and the TV movie and all that.
Like, I've only watched the revamp stuff. Like,
the
I
new,
haven't watched
like
any. I haven't seen anything since before Eccleston. So,
Tom Baker was my first Doctor.
I became a fan of Doctor Who, I'm sure, before Matt was actually born. back when they were broadcasting the Tom Baker episodes back on PBS. Mm. So. Most people in Minnesota of my age, I think, came to Doctor Who through Tom Baker on
PBS. Yeah.
That's probably
PBS.
when Nick was watching and he was.
I remember, was it Pertwee's 3, right?
Yeah,
Pertwee's 3.
And so I remember Sarah Jane Parker, and I remember Tom Baker, and I remember K-9, and, like, my mom has, every time we talk about nerd stuff around, at my mom's house, she'll always tell what she thinks is an embarrassing story, but was just actually like super nerd cred story, which is like, oh, I remember the Doctor Who theme song would come on and you'd come like stomping downstairs, like, you know, in your diaper being like, Dada Who, Dada Who. And it's like, yeah, you think that's insulting, but you're just like, you're just making it worse.
For the super pedantic geeks that are listening or who have been holding their breath, yeah, I'll say Sarah Jane Smith, not Sarah Jane.
Oh, right.
Did you mean Sarah Jessica?
The geeks Sarah Jane Smith, have been clenching their teeth cannot release.
He was confusing it with that horse-faced model that's married to Ferris Bueller.
The horse that's on television. Oh, my God. That's super embarrassing.
So, talk about... Sarah Jane Smith. Let's talk about atheism and Doctor Who, guys. Yeah. Is Doctor Who an atheist?
He is an atheist. He's, he may not mention it all the time, but I can build a case for it.
I want to hear it.
You brought notes, didn't
I? I want to hear the case.
Yes, here we go. So the general approach about Doctor Who, you know, how is the world built, right? There's no magic in the universe. They really do take the Arthur C. Clarke approach.
Sure.
Of, you know, any advanced science is indistinguishable.
Well, it's even like mythology, like vampires in Venice. Are they vampires? Nope. Aliens.
Nope.
Or you know, what have you.
Yep.
And their explanation for, and some of this is from the Expanded Universe, but it's been mentioned in the show too, like in the Satan Pit episode, but their explanation for any godlike characters, so like the White Guardian mm-hmm. and the Black Guardian from the Key to Time season, or the Celestial Toymaker, who is kind of retconned into one of the Guardians as well, mm-hmm. is that they come from before the expansion event, so before the Big Bang. They're a part of whatever universe had come before.
Sure.
And so as members of that previous, whatever that universe was, you know, we can't describe it, they have different abilities now in this universe, which translate into God.
Almost like the Endless.
Sure.
In Sandman.
Like a different universe. I mean, that universe could have had different laws of physics and different... I mean, the way matter and reality interact or exist in another universe could be potentially totally different. So, I mean, why wouldn't they have abilities or their own properties that are also, you know, not of our universe?
Yep.
Sure. I dig that.
And, you know, maybe contrasting, say, Doctor Who with Star Trek, they both are very much a humanistic...
Yeah.
You know, they're, you know, celebrate humanity, but I think they go about it in different ways. Like Star Trek, you have this kind of rigid military structure imposed. Doctor Who is much more, you know, the eccentric, the triumph of the individual
mm-hmm.
over, you know, in some cases, you know, he's a little bit more of an anarchist. He might overthrow society.
For sure.
He's the long shot too. Like he's always the underdog. It's never it's never like Doctor Who in this like predicted to win army is going to defeat the bad guy.
The Doctor is a detective character. A science detective, kind of. I mean, ultimately.
Is he an asshole science dick?
No.
He's kind of a dick. Yeah.
It depends on your perspective, I suppose. If you're the one whose plans are being foiled, I mean, he's an asshole.
Usually he doesn't even take time to even explain. He'll say, I'll explain later. And he never gets around to it.
Right, Patrick Jane.
Yeah, sure.
You'll see later, Lisbon.
And you definitely have, say, the atheism of the new series showrunners. So both Russell T. Davies and Stephen Moffat are atheists.
That's true. I didn't think about that.
A significant percentage of Brits are atheists. Well, right. It's like I wouldn't be surprised if
Neil Gaiman
60% or something
was as well.
Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised.
He may just be agnostic, but that wouldn't surprise me.
And, I mean, certainly in the classic series, you had Douglas Adams, who was the script editor over a series.
Radical atheist is how he described himself.
And then you've got, you know, Lala Ward, who is married to Richard Dawkins.
So one might imagine.
She's probably an atheist.
Yeah. She played the second Romana, and she was actually married to Tom Baker for, like, a year or two.
Really?
Yes. It's true.
Matt Smith recently came out as an atheist.
Really? I didn't know that. That's awesome.
That's super awesome.
We totally got to get him to be a guest on the show.
Mark Gatiss is an atheist. He could be the next showrunner after Moffat.
Oh, okay.
Potentially, they co-run Sherlock together.
Oh yeah. Right.
Which is a great fantastic show. We've already discussed how he's clearly an atheist.
Yeah. So you've got that running through the production team, through the actors, but you also have it as thematic plot elements, you know, in the show. In the classic series, there are two things that come to mind: the face of evil, which is a episode where Leela's introduced, and they explain like how they're, you know, this crashed survey team, but they lose their technology over time, and they begin to worship it, you know, as like a godlike thing, and they call themselves the Seva team.
Sure.
And another episode, the Rebos Operation, which is the first part of the Key to Time series, they had a, there's a character in there called Binro the Heretic, and he is basically like a Galileo stand-in, and he explains, you know, why it is their planet is super cold, because their orbit shifts, and, it, you know, he has this brilliant conversation with this off-worlder, you know, basically explaining, like, you know, you're right, you'll be vindicated someday. So you've got, you know, just a strong science element running through the series. In the new series, you've got The End of the World, which was Eccleston's second episode, where Russell T. Davies outlaws religion on Platform 1, and he, which is the space station that it took place on. This is the one with Cassandra. One of the race of characters that it was introduced were these robots called the they were monks, they were hooded, and they were called the Adherents to the Repeated Meme.
it's brilliant, very clever.
It, like you mentioned, you know, Vampires of Venice and the Unquiet Dead, you know, those are, you know, sinister plots foiled by good rational thinking, where you have supernatural assumptions that are dismissed, you know, by scientific truths. In Gridlock, which was the David Tennant episode, where they're stuck in traffic under the city,
you have all the
characters, you know, praying and praying, you know, that something's going to happen, and they do it for comfort, but nothing happens, and it takes the doctor, you know, this questioning agent of change to come in and actually motivate them to do something. River Song says to a Roman general in The Pandorica Opens, she says, "You've been a soldier far too long to believe there are gods watching over us."
Yeah, it's subtle, but it's in there a lot. I actually, it was more, when they started doing Torchwood, the first season of Torchwood, there was a lot more about religion and the existence of God in Torchwood even than in Doctor Who. In Doctor Who, they kind of play around it without ever really committing to it.
I poked around online a little, and what I found was in Dreamland, Sarah Jane Smith says there is not a God. Brittany Summerfield asserted that. Sarah Jane Smith was an atheist. This is what I had found. And, I mean, Romana said there are no gods, and
It always seems like it's in Doctor Who that it's. I know. I hear what you're saying about how Torchwood went into it a little bit more. It feels like, since Doctor Who is like a kids' show, kind of maybe. I mean, technically, it is.
It's a family show.
Sure. Yeah. So maybe they don't get into it as deeply. Do you think maybe that's the reason that Torchwood's able to
maybe
explore the ideas more often?
Maybe. Torchwood.
I think. But it's whether or not you like Torchwood. I didn't like it much either. But it's the same universe, and
more adult.
And they. You know, they went straight into asking people who died, you know, what is there? And the response was, there's nothing. There's nothing after death.
And it's the same universe. So.
And it's the same universe, so you can presume the same rules sort of
AKA
apply.
The universe, yeah.
Yeah, right.
And they certainly do a big deconstruction of that in the Torchwood Miracle Day miniseries, where, you know, they talk about, you know, religion and how that impacts, you know, if you cannot die, you know, what are the implications of that? For sure, Doctor Who, I think you're right, it addresses it kind of subtly or,
briefly.
You know, in kind of off lines, but it doesn't make it a focal point, for sure. And I think probably even less so in the Sarah Jane episodes, because those are even more aimed at kids.
I think that, like, it's like, there's atheism straight out, but it's off camera, and there's a light on it, and you can see the outline, the shadowy outline of this atheism in the show, but you don't see it directly. You see all this evidence of it. You see the space where it would be if they addressed it straight on.
A little bit more in series 6, you've got Stephen Moffat. You know, he actually made, you know, the silence. It's not actually the aliens, but they're referred to as a religious order,
mm-hmm.
And he makes the the church an enemy of the Doctor, and he's, you know, he says it's controlled by the papal mainframe.
I think the thing about atheism in Doctor Who is Doctor Who is not about atheism. It's just, I think, a fact of the universe. And that's why they don't spend a lot of time talking about it. It's just, this is how the universe works. There is no God in this universe. And all the characters are going to behave based on that fact.
Yeah.
They don't even have any religious characters, if you think about it. I mean, there aren't even, not like what we would consider, like there's no human being in a contemporary time that he goes and picks up or that is in an episode and it's like, well, I pray to Jesus, Doctor. Like, I believe in the divinity of Jesus Christ. And the Doctor's like, well, let's discuss, you know, they don't even, it's just, whereas almost any other show, if there's an atheist, there's a Christian.
Yeah.
Like, directly, opposing the X-Files.
There's no Christian in opposition to
exactly,
the Doctor.
Which is really interesting.
It kind of reminds me of, the stuff that Carl Sagan said about the beauty of the universe and science. And, like, I feel like Doctor Who's the same way. It's like, how many times are they in the TARDIS and they just show them looking out the door and seeing, like, the universe or seeing something beautiful or seeing another planet? I mean, it's, you don't need religion to see the beauty in things. There's enough real things that are, like, a miracle of beauty, just not magical.
Just right outside the TARDIS door.
Right, exactly.
The Doctor's
exactly.
making real miracles happen every day.
Yeah, that's why I kind of feel like that showing that beauty like that exists without the theological component is inherently a little bit atheist.
Well, before we go on to five questions, is there any other things we wanted to, any other points you wanted to really hit hard about Doctor Who and atheism? Anyone?
So the Doctor as an actual atheist. So we've established that he's got, you know, it in his world or whatever, but you've got the Seventh Doctor rejecting religion in The Curse of Fenric and having faith in his companions. You have the Ninth Doctor in Aliens of London saying, you know, speaking disparagingly about humanity's willingness to believe in something invisible. In The Parting of the Ways, Eccleston says that the only thing worse than a xenophobic Dalek is a xenophobic Dalek whose dislike of the unlike is founded not on political, cultural, or genetic programming, but based upon religious belief.
Oh,
so he actually comes out right there and kind of says that.
I mean, that's
that's right there.
Because you get the religious Daleks in that episode, which is kind of freaky.
It's like and since the Daleks are, I mean, originally kind of a
Nazis,
the analogy for the Nazis. It's like the only thing worse than Nazis is religious Nazis.
Which a lot of them were.
Nazis committing atrocities in the name of religion rather than.
Weird.
And it even carries through the more recent stuff, like in a town called Mercy, you've got how he treats the preacher in the town.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of, you know, you've got that hostility there.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, his statement of non-belief in the impossible planet, too. So he is definitely...
Throughout every generation, too. It's not like... It's not like
consistent.
Yeah, it's not like it's not like it's a trait of one generation version of him.
Sure. That's the Doctor. That's who he is.
Awesome. All right, well, let's go to five questions.
Yeah.
Are we ready? All right, Tim, why don't you start us off?
Oh, I can start with the best movie you have seen in the last 30 days.
Okay, I would... This is a little bit biased because I am very much a TV fan, so about 80% of what I watch is television.
Us too.
Yeah, we're TV fans.
Like, you know, watching season 4 of The Wire and going through TNG on Blu-ray, which looks amazing. So I'll give you the denominator. I've only seen 4 films in the last 30 days.
All right.
Okay.
I've seen Summer Wars, which is an anime from 2009.
Okay.
7 Psychopaths,
which is
fantastic,
which I saw on your recommendation. Cloud Atlas and Robot and Frank. So if you can't tell, I see a lot of my movies at the Riverview. And of those, I would say Robot and Frank.
Really?
I haven't even heard of it.
The Robot and Frank is a new one to me.
It's with Frank. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. It starts with an L. Langella.
Yeah.
And it takes place in the near future, and he's an elderly guy, and you know, instead of, you know, putting him in a nursing home, he gets a robot. So the movie is about his interactions with the robot, and it's fascinating. It's got a subplot that I don't much care for, which goes into his previous occupation, but apart from that, it's a delightful movie. Susan Sarandon's in it. It's good.
Awesome.
There's a robot. So Robot and Frank.
It's called Robot and Frank.
All right.
All right.
Awesome. We'll check that one out.
So our second question is, who's your favorite atheist character?
So I could go with the Doctor, but I'm not going to. I'm going to pick a villain.
Oh, all right.
I'm going to pick Diana from the miniseries V.
Oh.
She played by Jane Badler. In V, The Final Battle, she has this... at the time, I didn't like it because it was, you know, Catholic, but... really interesting scene where she basically, you know, shoots the priest's, this father's Bible, and then she shoots him. And she has this wonderful, like, monologue about the, you know, what religion's doing. It's so, I'd say Diana.
Huh, awesome.
That makes me think of, there's in a Stephen King book in Salem's Lot. The main vampire Barlow at one point, like the one of the guys holds out this cross and he's like holds it out in front of him like as if to ward off the vampire, and he just laughs and crunches it in one hand and just crumbles it to dust, and he's like basically like, your faith is dust in my hands, and it's like, no. it's just like that moment of like supreme evil, like having no care for your religion. Yeah.
Awesome. We can go into all sorts of questions about why villains are much more likely to be atheists than heroes, but we'll leave that for
another episode.
Yeah.
All right, so third question, what is your geekiest hobby? Like,
okay, so this is a hard one because I feel like I'm almost like a, as much as I'm into Doctor Who, I'm like as into that as I'm into MST3K or into Star Trek or
He-Man.
He-Man was my first fandom. So it's like, it's impossible to pick one. I'm like a succubus of fandoms, almost. You go in and like absorb all the information.
Fandom. You suck it all up. You suck the fandom dry.
And then I move on to the next one. If I had to pick one that's probably the geekiest or most esoteric, it would be I have a complete set of Choose Your Own Adventure books. All 184 of them.
It's amazing.
Plus all the spin-offs.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Those were my favorite. Like, seriously. I loved them so much.
Molly and I saw the shelf at your in your nerd cave, which
it's incredible,
fucking amazing.
Yeah,
it's
nerd cave.
It's like a full bookshelf of those little Choose Your Own Adventure kind of like paperback with the mostly white.
For many reasons, if there's an apocalypse, I want to be in Matt and Matt's basement.
Plenty of weapons.
Exactly.
I feel like
I'm gonna tell you guys about my fringe idea because this plays into that. Anyway, right. I'll tell you later.
Sure.
That's horrible on the podcast.
All right.
Anyway,
good radio.
Question number four: what's your favorite sandwich?
So I had narrowed it down to two places: Mavericks in Roseville, which I compare Mavericks. I say Mavericks is to Arby's what Chipotle is to Taco Bell.
Yeah, we go there work lunches sometimes.
I think that might even be understating Mavericks a little bit.
Mavericks is good.
That's just because you hate Chipotle so much.
No. It's because I hate Arby's that much.
But when do you get there?
I didn't pick that, actually.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
I just wanted to, it was an honorable mention.
Sure.
wanted to say Nelson's Cheese and Deli, which is right by here, by the State Fairgrounds.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
And they have a wonderful sandwich called the New Orleans, which is grilled Cajun chicken breast, kind of spicy, topped with pepper jack cheese, like nice gooey pepper jack cheese. You've got lettuce, you've got tomato, got onions, even though I hate onions. I never get it with onions.
I also hate onions.
I'm
not a raw onion person.
So no onions, but then it's got a blue cheese sauce on there.
That sounds amazing.
There you go.
On a Kaiser roll. Cheese.
Blue cheese and spicy goes together so well.
I was just thinking, Matt and I like a lot of the same things. We have the same birthday. I always forget that. We have the exact same birthday, so astrology must be right.
Boo, Molly. Boo.
Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
The evidence is right there, Tim. Same birthday.
God, Tim, it's
confirmation bias.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So then our fifth and final question is, what's the stupidest comment or criticism you've received regarding your atheism?
This is a tough one because stupidest thing I've ever seen would be people who wear symbols of torture devices around their neck.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
But you know what? It's a great bullshit detector now because it's like, you know, it's a wonderful way to say, you know, can this person that you're talking with think critically?
Yeah.
You know, or are they just, you know, wearing their ignorance around their neck?
Yeah.
So, but the stupidest thing I've heard is, where do you get your morals from? Because, you know, like religion is the source of all morality. It's like,
and then you just sit here and you go, can we review the Bible and some of the morality in the Bible so I can ask you where you get your morality from?
If the Bible is the only, or, you know, their religion and belief is the only thing keeping certain people from committing, you know, murder and all sorts of crime and rape, it's like, you're not a good person. The only thing keeping you from doing that is fear of retribution. Yeah. That's not good. That's scared.
Yeah.
Very scared. And it's like, well, where did I get my morals from? It's like, well, society. It's He-Man PSAs. You know, right? Episode, G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Any of those, you know, morals, I think, would be better than...
Well, knowing is half the battle.
Is, you know, anything found in the Bible.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever said to you that they think that you got your morality from being raised Catholic and that's actually where... Because I've heard that from some people lately, like, well, sure, if you were a Christian first, that's why you have good morals, whether or not you've fallen or strayed
and
now.
You took those morals with you into.
And, you know, even though I would then ask the question, well, then where does my son, who's an atheist, get his morals from?
Right.
Well, yeah. From you, and you were raised Christian, so blah, blah.
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful that we have morals in spite of religion.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Matt. This was really great.
Yeah.
We can, is there anything you plug or anywhere you want to?
We do want to mention that Matt gave us a copy. He had an extra copy of Atheist Voices of Minnesota, and not on this podcast. We're going to figure out what we're going to do to give this away, but we have a copy of the book to give away, so... Those of you who are listening, just keep listening for the next few episodes, and we'll have an opportunity to give you a free book.
Matt is the one who gave us the tickets that we gave away at our inaugural recording at Convergence for
Paul. So Matt's like our sugar daddy. Our sugar daddy.
our podcast giveaway sugar daddy.
I like that. All right. I like that. That's, you need a business card. Well, all right. So this is Matt Savigal, and Geeks Without God. You can find us on Twitter or Facebook, both Geeks Without God. You can follow us and like us and stuff. And we do blogging there. Tim blogs at PetSnakeReggie.com.
That's where I blog.
Nick and I are around. I don't know.
We kick ass.
Yeah. We do stuff all the time. Why are you judging us?
Like, yeah.
I do plenty.
God. I don't owe you any explanations.
Yeah. So whatever. Anyway. All right. Thanks, guys, for listening. And we'll catch you later. Bye.
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 Geeks Without God is proudly partnered with Fearless Comedy Productions.
We're geeks, geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Listen to past podcasts and catch us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. Follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God and like our Facebook page, Geeks Without God.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Substitute horses for men. People are going to be like, what?